Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach David Bartke here. Today is Thursday, November the 9th, 2017. And we are continuing with our explorations of Ask and It Is Given by Abraham Hicks. But we're also continuing with our newest traditions, David. We've been sharing wins and letters from readers, and it's been good stuff.
It has. It's exciting.
So, it is.
So what wins have you had since we talked last?
Well, let's see. I'd say the biggest win is one that we had, because it turns out that our numbers are continuing to rise.
Wow, yay.
Our numbers are very yeasty these days. There's lots of yeast in them.
Very nice.
Which is a good thing. Good. Yeah.
Yes. I like that.
Basically, to give you a perspective, we had 70% more unique listeners than last month.
Fantastic. You know,
for October compared to September.
Right.
They listened to 38% more podcasts. So, you know, that was good.
Yes.
I mean, I have a little graph that I'm drawing showing our listenership, and it's just going practically straight up. So, good stuff, you know.
Thank you, listeners.
Thank you, listeners. Yeah, absolutely.
Because without the listeners, people are enjoying what we're talking about.
Absolutely. Without the listeners, we're nowhere. Although, as you and I were talking before we started today's podcast, we love doing it just because of what it does for us. So it's almost a bonus to have the listeners. But the listeners appear to be liking it, so that's good news.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win.
So speaking of wins, what kind of wins did you have this week?
Well, let's see. Oh, well, one of my dogs got very sick, and she was actually in the hospital overnight. But she is back home, and she seems to be doing better, so that's a wonderful win.
That's good. Yeah, that's good.
And,
I'm glad to hear that.
What else? Oh, you know what? I've been making healthier eating choices, and that's, for me, that's a win, because I can very easily just say, oh, there's, you know, a box of chocolates, let me have a few.
Yeah, I think most of us could appreciate that one.
Or, you know, when you go to a restaurant and there's all these options, my mind wants me to order the high-calorie fattening thing. So I've been like, no, we're going to order the salad.
Yeah.
So that's good. For me, that's like a really good win that I'm more aware of that, because I think that's important. So
very good.
That's good. And what else? Oh, we also have a question, by the way.
Oh, what's the question?
So Neil from New Jersey. Wow, this is a, why doesn't the universe give me what I ask for?
Okay.
That's his question. So I would say, Neil, one, I would really like to know more about your question. Like, what have you asked for, and how is your thinking about what you're asking for? Because, as we know, Walt, you know, the way we think about what we ask for allows it or doesn't allow it. So if he's thinking about what he wants in a more resistant, low vibration way, then it's possible he could be blocking it from showing up. You know, if he's focusing on why isn't whatever I've asked for coming, and why is it taking so long, or this doesn't work, or things like that, then he would be blocking it from manifesting.
Yeah, I mean, as you pointed out, it all depends on what he means by it. But from my perspective, I think my answer would be, you are getting what you're asking for. It's just that you don't realize that what you're asking for is inconsistent with what you desire.
Yes, that's a good way of saying it. Yeah. Yeah.
Another way to say the same thing is, when you have your heart on set on something and you put out a request for it, and then you spend a whole bunch of time after that doubting it or thinking about stuff that contradicts it or in any way works against what it is that you're looking for, guess what? You're not going to get it.
That's what I meant. Yes, and what you said is true too, because he's asking for whatever, but at the same time he's asking for it, he's probably going into the resist, the doubt, the worry, the fear, and the when and the how and all that. And that's all the low vibration resistance that could be blocking it.
But by the way, we're very glad that you're listening, and that so many other people are listening too, but especially you, because the more that you listen, I think the more you're going to understand how this whole process works.
Yes.
And that's really the most important thing, because you're understanding the knowledge that you get out of this. That's really going to be, you know, the big value. And speaking of which, for those who are not subscribed, I mean, a lot of our listeners are on PRN, which is great. We love PRN.
Yes.
But just in case you aren't always tuned into PRN, you could miss us. Whereas if you subscribe to the podcast, it always shows up on your iPhone or your Android phone. So subscribe to the podcast. You know, you can do it through Google Play. Oh, that's the other big piece of news. We're now in Google Play, David.
Yay!
I got us in there. So we're in Google Play. We're also in the iTunes store. So either of the main stores for the two main smartphone operating systems we're in. Or you can also find us at our website, loatoday.net. Just click the podcast subscribe button there, and that'll get you in. So there's lots of ways to subscribe now. I mean, you can obviously continue to listen to us on PRN, but, you know, why miss it? You know, if you just happen not to be tuning into PRN, you can still get the podcast.
That's right. And if anyone out there is considering some law of attraction coaching, they can just go to lifecoachdavid.com and they can find out more about me and they can find out how to contact me. And also, if anyone has a question they want answered, you could just email it to me, which is david@lifecoachdavid.com. And also, feel free to add more to your questions, because, like, the more information you give us, the more we could directly answer it.
Right.
Because, like, with Neil from New Jersey, why doesn't the universe give me what I ask for? It would be great if he had, like, elaborated a little bit more so we could be more on point with him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, I agree with you.
Yeah. Now, well, I also have a great quote from Abraham I'd like to share.
Sure.
Because this comes up a lot, and I think everybody would appreciate it. So here's the quote. I have complete control over my own thoughts. You can find yourself in an endless loop where you explain that you feel negative because of the negative behavior of someone else. But if instead you take control of your own emotions and you think an improved thought because it feels better to do so, you will discover that no matter how the negative trend got started, you can turn it around. You have no real control of what anyone else is doing with their vibration or with their actions for that matter, but you have complete control over your own thoughts, vibrations, emotions, and point of attraction.
Yeah, I love that one. That's the one that came out today, right? On the day that we're recording this. That's today's quote, but it's perfect. It's apropos.
Yeah, I just love that reminder that, you know, we have only control over our thoughts.
Yes.
Like, and our emotions and our vibration.
Which is as it should be, when you think about it.
Yes.
Because we really don't want people to have control over our thoughts.
Right, or controlling how our vibration is.
That's right.
And like if someone
it's
else,
nice
if
to know that,
know
that we really do have that control and they really can't control us. The only control they ever have is the control we give them.
Right, because, you know, there's times when someone we know, they might be in a bad mood for some reason or a low vibration, and it can be easy for that to bring us down. So it's good to remember that, okay, wait a minute. Just because they're going through what they're going through, it doesn't mean I have to lower my vibration because of that.
This is true.
So I love that quote because it's just a great reminder of that.
Very, very true. So anyway, actually, that carries us into the chapter that we're doing this week, too, because we're on to chapter 12 this week, which is entitled Your Emotional Set Points Are Within Your Control, which is exactly what we were just talking about.
Perfect. Yeah. Yes.
So let me do a little reading here. It starts off by saying, most people do not believe they have control over what they believe. They observe things happening around them and evaluate them, but they usually feel that they have no control whatsoever about the belief that is formulating within them. They spend their lives sorting events into categories of good or bad, wanted or unwanted, right or wrong, but rarely do they understand that they have the ability to control their personal relationship with these events. It is impossible to control conditions that others have created, is the name of the next subsection. And it reads, since many people approve of some of the conditions that others have created, but disapprove of others, they set out on the impossible mission of trying to control conditions. Through personal force or strength or gathering together in groups to gain the feelings of more power or control, otherwise known as democracy, they seek to preserve their own well-being by attempting to take control of any circumstances that they believe could threaten it. But In this attraction-based universe where there is no such thing as exclusion, the harder they push against unwanted things, the more they achieve vibrational alignment with unwanted things. And in doing so, the more they invite unwanted things into their own experience. And as more unwanted things now manifest in their experience, they shore up their own belief. In other words, they prove it to themselves that they were right all along about how bad and invasive that unwanted thing was to begin with. In other words, the more you defend your own beliefs, the more the law of attraction helps you to live them out. That's the key phrase right there. The more you defend your own beliefs, the more the law of attraction helps you live them out.
Yes.
So if you choose to continue to believe that bad things are going to happen, the law of attraction says, okay, let's help you live that out. That's why it's so important to realize we control our own beliefs. We control our own thoughts. And even if we get unwanted thoughts and unwanted beliefs coming to us, we don't have to accepting them, meaning that we don't have to pay any attention to them. We don't have to keep focusing on them. We don't have to dwell on them and worry about them and all that kind of stuff. We can say, well, forget that, shrug my shoulders, move on.
Yes. And that goes along with the other Abraham quote that we always talk about, where you're always saying yes to everything you're focusing on.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
And that's a really big thing to really get, like, oh, my God, I better be careful what I'm focusing on.
Yeah, well, it's not even – it is that you want to be careful about it. And, yes, we're better off when we're careful on it. But it's not like it's a have to or else kind of a thing. It's that's where the good stuff is. The good stuff is choosing what you're going to focus on.
And realizing that we can refocus.
Just because you get the other stuff.
Yeah, just because our mind suddenly may bring us to some negative thoughts, it doesn't mean we have to stay there.
That's right. Yeah, we're not locked in. And I'll tell you, David, one of my contentions for quite some time has been that the feeling of being stuck like that on, you know, negative thoughts coming in and feeling bad about stuff all the time and so forth, I contend that that's the basis of addiction. Because really that's what an addict is. An addict is somebody who's constantly looking to mask pain by repeating a behavior that continuously fails to mask the pain consistently. But they focus on it anyway. And they continue to focus on it. And the more they focus on it, the more the universe says, okay, here's some more of it. It's so ironic how that happens. And yet that's the nature of addiction. Addiction is the belief that you must stay focused on whatever your circumstances are. And nothing you will do will ever change that. So the most you can ever hope to do is to mask it by taking a drug or drinking alcohol or abusing somebody or getting angry about stuff or whatever your particular addiction is. You can be addicted to food. You can be addicted to just treating people badly. You can be addicted to repeating the same habits every day because you've always kept, you know, the same habits every day. They're all addictions.
Right. So instead of choosing another thought and choosing another option.
A different option, one that you have not been focusing on. The 12-step people have a great phrase for it. They point out that insanity can be defined as repeating the same steps over and over again because you expect them to produce a different result.
Yes, I have heard that. Yes.
I think it's, you know, truly excellent.
Yes.
Because it really summarizes it beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Keep doing the same thing, and how is something different going to happen?
That's right.
Like Esther said, you can't get from here to there. Unless you change, you have to change your focus, change your thought.
So getting back to the text of the chapter here, the next section is called, But Whose Truth is the True Truth? I like that one.
A little bit of a tongue twister.
But Whose Truth is the True Truth? With enough attention.
Sounds like a Dr. Seuss.
It does, yes. Hop on pop. Okay, so... With enough attention to anything, the essence of what you have been giving thought to will eventually become a physical manifestation. And then as others observe your physical manifestation through their attention to it, they help it to expand. And then in time, this manifestation, whether it is one that is wanted or not, is called truth. You want to remember that you have absolute choices about the truths that you create in your own experience. Once you understand that the only reason anyone ever experiences anything is because of their attention to the subject, then it is easy to see that truth only exists because someone gave their attention to it. Boy, is that a profound statement right there.
Wow, yes, yes.
It flies in the face of everything that science and reason knows in its own realm to be true. It's not about whether you focus on it, it's whether it's actually true, you know, independently, objectively. Well, no, it's actually
true.
It actually has nothing to do with that. There's, in fact, interesting thing, I learned this one a while ago. There is no such thing as objectivity. Did you ever notice that?
Like, what do you mean?
Well, supposedly it's possible in the realm of logic and reason to pay attention to what's going on and say, well, I can look at this objectively and dispassionately, and I can imagine that this objective, dispassionate position of mine will prevent any kind of bias from entering the equation. Now, that's the idea of objectivity, right? And the only problem is, it's impossible. There is no possible way to achieve that. And the best way I can think of to explain why that's true and how we know that that's true is to look at what the case is with that I told you about last week, the guy who studied brain damage to people.
Right.
And how he would, you know, ask them to would you like to go out to lunch? And then they'd spend the next 3 hours trying to pick, you know, where to go because they couldn't make a decision. And the reason they couldn't make a decision is because the emotional centers of their brain were damaged, so they could not express a preference. That idea of preference is so important.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have a preference, if you can't express a preference, you can't even be objective. You're just stuck. You're just waiting for something to come along to guide you somewhere. And the whole idea of objective reasoning is based on, I'm going to be dispassionate, but I'm going to use my reason and my logic to evaluate what's going on. The problem is the word evaluate. Evaluation requires emotion. You cannot, that's what the lesson of the brain damaged patients is, that all preferences, all evaluations, the valuation of things requires emotion. You cannot value without having an emotional preference. And as long as you cannot value, then it is impossible to dispassionately look at something and evaluate. Cannot be done. But how much of science, how much of reason, how much of theology, how much of all of the major areas of human inquiry assume the idea that you can maintain an objective perspective? All of them do.
Yeah.
They all do. So this is a really, really important point, one that I think revolutionizes thought, revolutionizes the history of thought. The idea that something is true and it only exists because someone gave their attention to it.
That's right. That's right.
Very, very
important. A lot of times, and that can keep someone stuck in whatever's going on because that's what they're focusing on.
Absolutely. So continuing, it says, so when you say, I should give my attention to such and such because it is true, that is the same thing as saying, another gave their attention to something that they did not want, and by their attention to it, they have invited it into their experience. And since they have attracted something unwanted into their experience, I should do it also. And when you express it that way, you realize just how silly the whole concept is of trying to figure out what truth is and be true to truth. They're like, no, stop. You're killing me.
That's part of the what is, like,
yes.
Staying focused on what is just keeps what is continuing instead of refocusing to what you want.
That's right, because they're all what-is's. Everything that we experience in life are what is's. They're all what is's. The question is, which ones do you like and which ones do you not like? If you like it, go ahead and keep focusing on it because it feels good. That's why we're here, to enjoy doing stuff like that.
Yes, but that's where the issue comes in, is that too many keep focusing on the what is of something they don't want.
Yes.
Because it's here, because it's easier, because they can see it.
Well, that also ties into what the chapter here was talking about earlier, about different people's truths and so forth, and listening to other people's truths. We are in a society that has forgotten, in a sense, what the true spiritual truth is. That's probably a bad way of saying it. What the fact about the universe is, which is that the universe is law of attraction driven, and that like attracts like, and that has always been true and always will be true. Because we have lost sight of that, it becomes really easy for us to slip into the mode of feeling lost, of feeling loss, actually, without the T, loss, and feeling pain and taken away from and victimized and all this other stuff, not realizing that when we feel those ways and we try to do the things I talked about before, or get down together in groups or force our will on others or whatever, all we're really doing is reinforcing the what is.
Yes, yes.
And asking the universe to keep sending us more and more and more of it.
And it keeps it the same. Yep.
There's actually a very good example of this that's going on right now here in the United States and has been for the last year and a half or so. We're always a little bit hesitant to bring up politics, but it has so many good lessons in it, so that's why I bring it up again. But the President Donald Trump. Now, I don't care which side of the issues you are. You may be pro-Trump, you may be anti-Trump. Doesn't make any difference. The point here, the key point, is he is extremely polarizing. He's a polarizing individual. And stuff that he says, his fans adore and his enemies hate. And everybody's dancing to this whole tune about what Donald Trump thinks. Now, here's an interesting fact that my wife brought up. She brought this up right after he got elected. I thought it was brilliant. She said, think about what Donald Trump is. Donald Trump, my wife has a psychology background. So she describes people like Donald Trump as what she calls borderline personalities. There's actually a borderline personality disorder, which is somewhat similar to what she's talking about, but she's using it a little bit differently. So if you're in the psychology field and you feel like we're misusing the term, just bear with us. We're talking about her own use of the term, not the scientifically accepted version of it. But for her, a borderline personality is someone who's constantly looking to get everybody's attention. The classic borderline is somebody who wears all black. Or wears, you know, the sexy red dress because she just wants to get everybody to look at her. Or, you know, spangles and baubles and beads and sparkly things. You know, the people who just behave in wild ways in order to keep the attention on them because they're craving human attention. That's what she calls the borderline personality. And that's what Donald Trump is. He's very much of a personality who wants to have attention. He craves attention. And he'll create any controversy in the world in order to get that attention. And he gets it. Well, my wife pointed out, what would happen if no one paid attention to Donald Trump? He would implode as a human being. His whole reason for being, that is, to absorb huge amounts of human attention, would be deflated because no one's paying any attention to the poor guy. I mean, it would probably be the end of the Trump presidency because he couldn't nearly be in the mental ward, you know.
No one's paying attention to me.
Well, imagine also if we apply the same principle in our own lives and refuse to pay attention to those big red flags that are waving all over the place saying, pay attention to me, pay attention to me, pay attention to me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that if there's a fire in your house, you shouldn't pay attention to it. I mean, obviously, there are certain things you do need to pay attention to, but they are not nearly as numerous as most people like to make them out to be. And they don't happen very frequently. Most of the time, most of the red flags that are waving really don't require any attention at all. Most of the time, they can be ignored. If there's a red flag waving that directly impacts your life, and I mean directly within your house, you know, that kind of thing, then yes, pay attention to it to some degree. And even then, evaluate whether or not you are paying attention to the appropriate thing. So let's assume you do have that, you know, that Donald Trump figure in your house. Well, just because he's there, just because you've decided you can't leave, doesn't mean you have to give in and just pay attention to all his rants or her rants. It could be a her, too. Just because you're living in the same house doesn't mean you have to make their reality your reality. That's the message. You can choose to focus on other stuff. And that's the cool part. That's the cool part. That's what this chapter is really trying to tell us. You are not locked in to what goes on around you.
Yes, or in your thoughts.
No matter how bad it is.
That's right. There's always a better thought to reach for.
There's always a better thought to reach for. It doesn't matter how bad things get. You still have complete control. And that's a hard topic. That's a hard idea to get a hold of because there are so many ways we convince ourselves, well, I can't really do that.
Yeah. But the important thing to remember, too, is that, like, when I say reach for a better thought, even one thought a little better than where you are is good. Like, you don't have to get to, like, a Pollyanna thing where suddenly, like, oh, everything's just wonderful. Like, you do it gradually.
That's right. Actually, that's what the next chapter, or not the next chapter, the next paragraph in the book talks about.
The subhead is your point of attraction is being affected. And it says, when your activated thoughts are general and not very focused, those early vibrations are still very small and do not yet have much attraction power or pulling power, so to speak. That's something for Neil to keep in mind. And so in these early stages, you would not likely see any manifested evidence of your attention to the subject. But even though you do not yet see the evidence, the attraction of other thoughts that are a vibrational match to these is occurring. In other words, the thought is becoming stronger. Its pulling power is getting stronger. Now that's a really key point. The pulling power keeps getting stronger. And other similar thought vibrations are joining it. And as the thought gains momentum, you now begin to get an emotional reading on how well this growing thought vibration is matching the energy of your source. If it matches who you are, your good feeling emotions indicate that. And if it does not match who you are, your bad feeling emotions indicate that. But this whole idea of it growing over time, that's why it's so important to stay consistent.
Yes, absolutely. And have that trust that, yes, this is going to happen.
That's
it
right. Yeah. That trust.
Even if you don't see the proof yet, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Nope. Totally irrelevant, which is weird, but
that's
it's true.
Right. But the proof, if you really do it and you do reach for those better thoughts one by one, the proof is in that you're feeling a little better about it happening. You're feeling a little bit more confident.
Yes. And it grows. It's self-reinforcing. So over time, the more that you focus that way, the more that you choose to feel that way, the more it becomes true.
Yes, and as you said, the more you choose to.
Yes.
It's always a choice.
It's always a choice. That's the other thing that we constantly need to remind ourselves on. It's always choice. No matter what's going on, the choices are always there. And if you're in one of those places, I've been there, I know you've been there too, where it doesn't seem like there's any happy choices, that's where I have to remind myself, there's always a silver lining somewhere. My job is to find it.
Yes, and you can always think of one thought a little better. You can. It's always there.
Oh, yeah.
It's always there.
Yeah. You just have to look for it. You have to be willing to look outside of your comfort zone, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which is key. That's important.
Because if you think about it, and like you said, we've all been there, like I think a lot of people just stew in what they don't want, and they call their friends and talk about it and keep talking about it and talking about it.
Yeah.
And it just reinforces it, and it's like, stop it, people. No. Reach for that one thought better, and then later on, reach for one thought better than that, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Choose to do that instead of stewing in whatever it is that's going on.
So anyway, they go in, the next part of the chapter, they go into a little bit of an example of how this works from our childhoods.
Sounds good.
So it says, for example, when you were little, your grandmother may have said to you, "You are such a wonderful child. I love you so very much. You will have a fulfilling and happy life. You have so many talents, and the world will benefit by your presence." Why didn't I have that grandmother?
No, I was just going to say, wait a minute.
I want that grandmother. My grandmothers were great, especially my maternal grandmother, but I don't remember any of them saying that. That was really good.
Yeah, like, I want that to be said to me. Like, let me go back to childhood and have that drummed into my brain.
These words felt good because they were a vibrational match to what was at the very core of you. But when someone says to you, "You are bad, you should be ashamed of yourself, you have displeased me, you are inappropriate." That's a weird one. You are inappropriate? Well, whatever. These words feel awful because your attention to them has caused you to become vibrationally different from who you really are and what you really know. Boy, is that a key point. When someone's saying something about how you've displeased them or how you're behaving inappropriately or you're not the right kind of person, and you know deep down that you aren't really doing anything bad, you just got this really awful person who's trying to get you to do something, that's the time to remind you that the reason that you feel bad, it's time to remind yourself, the reason you feel bad is because what they're saying is vibrationally different from who you really are.
That's right.
That's actually where the power comes from. Recognizing that what someone else is telling you doesn't resonate and being true to the resonation.
Yeah, and I don't know, I just think what we were talking about before, like anyone who's listening, if, especially a child, if they express some interest they have, and even if it's not something you want them to do or that you would do, just support them at that point. Who knows if they'll even do it, but that's just so much healthier than, you know, say, "Oh, no, you can't do that," or, you know, something like that.
Can you imagine if we had an entire society of people who did exactly that, who just reinforced and praised and said positive things to children all the time. Can you imagine how much different that society would be in just 10 years?
And I'm going to share a personal thing. When I was probably about 6 or 7, there was a family friend, and she and I remember this like it was yesterday, and she said, "Oh, and what do you think you want to do when you get older?" Now, this is like 7 years old, and I thought, and I said to her, "Oh, I want to be an actor."
Okay.
For whatever reason, I said that. And do you know what she said? She said, "Oh, that's for special people."
For special people. Now, what did she mean by special people?
Well, and I felt like she took a bat and hit me over the head. That's how that, and so that's what I'm saying. Like, even if she, like, for whatever reason, she thought, I mean, who knows
what it sounds like what she was saying is you're not special.
Right, exactly. Or not, or, so that's what I'm saying. So if she had just said, "Oh, that's wonderful," just, or whatever, like, I wouldn't have had to have, have that traumatic experience. So it's just so important, you know. So that's what I'm saying, like, just support the child, even if, because who knows if they'll even end up doing whatever. But you're just kind of promoting that positivity within them.
I'm not a big fan of watching TV shows, but my wife watches a lot of TV, so sometimes I'll watch with her, you know, because it's something to do together. And one of the things she likes to watch is biographical-type programs. Programs that describe it, not describe, but present people telling their own stories, especially famous people. You know, how did they get there? How did they become famous? You know, how much support did they get at home?
And how that
support at home led them to feeling, you know, more supported when they went out there. Now, there's some people who became famous who didn't get support, and they, you know, this was basically their way of overcoming what they did, which you can certainly do. It takes a massive amount of thought shift to do it, but you can do it. But the more interesting ones to me are the ones where the parents were very supportive. Despite all of what society was telling them, you know, don't do that. Don't support your kid that way. They supported him anyway, and it paid off, you know, in spades, really. That's the cool stuff from my perspective.
I know. I agree. I love hearing a biography where the person says, "Oh, am I... mother or father or both of them really were supportive of me doing this, and it just gave me that extra boost." I'm like, wow, you were really lucky.
Yes.
You were really lucky.
Yes. Very cool when that happens. I just wish it would happen more. But imagine what would happen as our society. I just said this a few minutes ago, I know, but imagine what would happen in our society if that were the norm.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
It'd be incredible. It'd be unbelievably good.
Yes. Yes. I never understood why parents push what they do on their children. like that's a different person there. Like, they have different ideas about what they want to do. Like, it doesn't have to be what you do or what you would want to do.
Yeah.
I just don't get that.
I don't know. It's hard to explain. It's hard to explain, parents. But that seems to be a lot of what happens. And, you know, eventually something's got to change. You know, people have got to change their perspective. They got to change what it is they think the way the world should go and so forth. But until they do.
And from a law of attraction point of view, I would just ask anybody, like, what is still going on within yourself where you're sabotaging yourself about doing something or achieving something where you could just as easily say, you know what? I can do this. I don't even know how, but I can. I'm going to take some step towards whatever that is.
Right. Yeah, that's the lesson here, because we can basically take that position anytime we want to.
Yes.
There is
that
nothing
is
the,
always an option.
It's yes, always, it's an, always option. An option. Every single day, every single moment of every day. Now, they continue in the chapter kind of zeroing in on how you do that, how you, you know, change your thought process throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
And they start off by talking about what they call the emotional set points. So this subsection is called Moods as Indicators of Your Emotional Set Point. When you continue to focus upon any thought, it becomes increasingly easy to continue to focus upon it because the law of attraction is making more thoughts like it available to you. That's what we've been talking about. And so emotionally speaking, you are developing a mood or an attitude. Vibrationally speaking, you are achieving a habitual vibrational groove, so to speak, or a set point. So now we have a definition of what a set point is. A set point is a groove. It's a vibrational groove.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like we're in the 60s.
Groovy, man.
By the way, do you know where that phrase comes from? That slang word comes from, groove?
Groovy? No, wait, where does it come from?
It comes from record grooves.
Really? Really?
Yeah, the old vinyl records.
Yeah.
You know, the needle ran in a groove.
Yes, and I remember that.
And so if you had something that was really good going on, they equated it to listening to some good music. So it was groovy.
That's interesting. I like a little trivia like that.
Absolutely useless, but it's fun. So continuing, it says, your mood is showing you a good representation of what you are inviting into your experience. Your mood or your general feeling about something is a clear indication of your practiced vibration. In other words, whenever any subject is activated within you through your exposure to your environment, your vibration jumps immediately to your most practiced vibrational place or set point. Here we are, we're talking about the set point, and that set point is really nothing more than a measurement of how you're feeling.
Yes, and I like that, your most practiced
one. Your practiced one, yes, meaning the one that you focus on the most often.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it shows how important repetition is.
That's right.
Repetition is critical to this. The more you repeat it, the better off you are in terms of trying to get to that point.
Yes.
So, and they give an example. For example, let us say that when you were a child, your parents experienced severe financial difficulty. Yeah, I wonder how many people can relate to that one.
Yeah.
I know I can. Anyone who, anyone of my generation, which is now almost the senior generation, grew up with parents who were from the Depression era generation, and boy, did we learn about severe financial difficulty and having a severe financial difficulty mindset. Ugh. I have to shake it off just to think about it.
I was just saying, it sounded like that. Like I was going to say, it sounded like you just shook it up.
Oh, boy. But anyway, continuing with the example. And so the lack of money and the inability to purchase desired things was often discussed in your home, with the accompanying emotion of worry and fear. Often in response to your request for something, you were told that money doesn't grow on trees, and that just because you want it doesn't mean you'll get it, and that you, like everyone else in this family, should learn to do without. That is just the way that it is. I shudder as I read this.
Yeah.
Because of years of exposure to these thoughts of lack, your habit of thought around the subject of money, your emotional set point, became one of low expectation of financial success. Guess what happens when you have a low expectation of financial success, David? Guess what happens?
Low income.
You get a low degree of financial success. What an amazing concept. But that's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
And so, whenever you thought about money or abundance, your mood or attitude would immediately shift to disappointment, worry, or anger. That's probably the hardest part of all, because that's the time you need to shift your thought point. And it's so hard to do when you have this long-standing habit of always just feeling. It's like somebody pushed your button, right? You had this button that was constantly being wired and rewired and rewired and rewired. Anytime that the concept, the topic of financial success came up, you started feeling worry. That's what I did.
Yes.
I still feel it at times. I feel it a lot more often than I'd like to even admit, but it's true. I am so tired of it, but even with being tired of it, even with focusing on, you know, or attempting to focus on something else, it just keeps pulling me back. That's the biggest struggle right there. And yeah, it is a struggle, but it doesn't have to be. It can be easy. I can decide to shift my mind. I can decide to say, you know what? Screw the fact that it's been going on all my life. Screw the fact that I've been programmed that way. This can actually be easy. It can be easy to shift over to abundance and actually inventing abundance in my mind. I can, if I'm willing to do it, if I'm willing to commit to it, I can sit down and I can start imagining what it's like to live in abundance.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, financial things are definitely one of the more common things that people get stuck in the what is.
Yeah.
But what do you mean you want to know what would I do if I had an unlimited amount of money? I don't have any money right now. Because it's just so what is. That's like one of the easiest what is things that people get stuck in.
And I think that almost all of us can, at least in some way, be sympathetic to it. Because we've all been there one way or another.
But you got to use your law of attraction muscle and refocus on what you want. Even though if the what is lack of money right now, if you want to attract more money, you got to get out of that.
Now, of course, it doesn't have to be about money. There are lots of ways we can have negative associations. And as they go on, they have two more examples here. They say, or when you were a child, maybe your friend's mother was killed in an auto accident, and then your close association with someone who was experiencing such severe childhood trauma made you fearful for the well-being of your own parents. Whenever they traveled somewhere by automobile, you would be gripped by fear until they returned. And so, bit by bit, you developed a habit of worry about the well-being of those you loved. Your emotional set point became that of insecurity. Or when you were a teenager, perhaps your grandmother suddenly died of a heart attack, and in the years that followed her death, you often heard your mother expressing her concern about the high probability of the same thing happening to her and her children, including you. Nearly every time any conversation about your grandmother came up, her untimely heart attack became an emotional and fear-producing part of the conversation. Even though your body was strong and you continued to feel physically good, concern about your own physical vulnerability rumbled under the surface. And so over time, you achieved an emotional set point of physical vulnerability.
That's right.
And it was all thought. It was all thought and belief. There were no actual traumas going on after she died.
Right. That's right. It was all within your thoughts.
But there actually was a trauma going on. It was a self-induced trauma.
Yeah.
It was a mental trauma. And it's amazing how many volunteers we have in society. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We just volunteer for trauma. We say, hey, here comes trauma. I'm in. Where do I sign up?
This happened 20 years ago, and I'm still thinking about it. Yeah.
And then it doesn't go away, and we say, well, why doesn't it go away? Well.
Sometimes you got to tell yourself a different story.
Sometimes you got to just change the subject.
Yes. Yes.
Change it to anything. I mean, oh, my goodness. We are so good at that. It's crazy how good we are at it.
At a minimum, just go general. Like, just think
something.
About something, something better than that.
Yeah. Something, anything. So, okay, your emotional set points can be changed. In the same way that your emotional set points can change from feeling basically good or secure to feeling bad or insecure, your set points can change from not feeling good to feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
For your set points are achieved simply by attention to a subject and through your practiced thought.
Yes.
However, most people do not deliberately offer thought, but instead they let their thoughts gravitate to whatever is happening around them. Something happens, they observe, they have an emotional feeling response to what they're observing, and since they usually feel powerless in controlling what they're observing, they conclude that they have no control over their emotional response to what they're observing. That's pretty much, that's living by default. That's what you and I call living by default.
Yes.
We aren't actively choosing our thought process. We aren't actively choosing what it is we want to happen. We are spending all of our time reacting, like members of an audience reacting to a movie that constantly plays. And it never stops playing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the never-ending double feature. It's amazing how we are all... We allow ourselves to get trapped in this stuff.
Yes. Because that's what we're focusing on. That's what's easy to focus on instead of deliberately shifting it.
But I'll tell you something else that's even more amazing, David, and I think you're going to agree with this. What's even more amazing is when someone decides to break free.
Of course. Yes,
decide
they have
to make a change.
They have that aha moment.
Yeah.
Where they're like, oh my God, wait a minute. I don't have to keep thinking about this or this in this way.
By the way, if any of our listeners have had any aha moments lately, that's a good thing to write in about. You don't have to just ask questions about how the law of attraction works. Share your aha moments with us.
Yeah, of course. Any aha moments are definitely welcome.
Yeah. They give us something good to talk about, too. I mean, even here in the show, we're talking about this stuff in order to educate and to help ourselves and to help listeners and so on and so forth. And in the process of doing that, you know, by necessity, you end up talking about some negative stuff. It'd be great to talk about some positive stuff. So talking about aha moments, that would be, you'd be juicing us up.
Yes. I mean, I don't remember exactly when, but I do remember the aha moment when it really clicked within myself that, oh, I always do have a choice about what I'm thinking about. Like, that was a big thing to really get.
So what were the circumstances? Do you remember?
That's what I'm saying. I don't even remember.
Oh, you don't remember what they were. Oh, okay.
It was so many years ago, but when that moment happened, like, I remember the moment of, like, oh, that's right. It's always a choice what I'm thinking about. It's always a choice. So, I don't have to think about this bad thing right now. I can change my thoughts to something better.
I'm not sure that I ever had an actual aha moment like that. I mean, I might have, but I just don't recall it that way. For me, it was sort of a gradual evolution of understanding that, you know, it just kind of happened over time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it was a concept that I played with in my mind. You know, is it true? Is it not true? You know, well, it seems to be true. Sometimes it doesn't seem to be true, you know, all that kind of thing. And then I just kind of, you know, edged my way there over time. But
with me, it's more like, now I get it.
The light bulb went on.
I just had an aha moment. Now I really get it. I thought I got it before, but now I really get it.
Well, I have had plenty of aha moments in the exploration of law of attraction.
Yeah.
It's just that particular thing, I can't think that I had an aha moment.
Yeah.
But lots of things. I think my biggest aha moment was when I heard the Abraham Hicks concept of the two-ended stick.
Yep, that's really good.
Their way of trying to explain how there really aren't opposites in the sense that we understand them. It's not good versus bad or wanted versus, well, it's wanted versus unwanted, but it's not good versus bad. It's not true versus untrue. It's thing versus lack of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the thing is that you're focusing on that you want to attract, if what you're really focusing on is I don't have that thing, you're actually focusing on the other end of the stick.
That's right.
When I finally grasped that one was truly an aha moment. And I'm not sure I can even tell you what the circumstances were, but I can tell you that it was at a time in my life when I was feeling very frustrated with the law of attraction because it didn't seem to work. It didn't seem to work. And I'd heard the thing about how you want to make sure that you're not contradicting the thought. And I kind of got that. But the way that this concept of thing versus lack thing is usually expressed didn't really work for me. The way it's usually expressed is there's no such thing as not. The universe doesn't know what not means. So when you say, or what no means. So when you say, I don't want this or I don't want that, the universe understands it as I want this, I want that.
Exactly.
And that didn't resonate nicely with me. That just didn't feel right. I couldn't make sense out of it because I didn't realize at the time that I was struggling with that this whole concept of I want that, I don't want that being the same thing really doesn't address the core issue, which is when you focus on lack, you're experiencing lack. And that's why I like the two-ended stick analogy better. It says it better from my perspective. It makes it clear.
Now, when you're talking about is that the one where every thought is really two thoughts?
Every thought is really two thoughts. The thought and the lack of the thought. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. One is thought. The other end is lack.
Yes. Yes.
And when you look at it that way and you understand how stuff works that way, I find the universe makes much more sense. I don't know about you, but to me that just works better.
That's why I always tell people, if you catch yourself thinking about something you don't want or the lack of something, if you could be aware enough in that moment to just say to yourself, okay, then what do I want? What do I want then about whatever it was you were thinking about?
Yes.
That's amazing when you really do that and start training yourself to go to there, go to what do I want then about this? What do I want? And why do I want it? Then it helps to keep you more focused on what you want as opposed to whatever it is you were thinking about that you don't want.
I'm not sure if that counts as an aha moment, but it's certainly a win.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
it's just a good little technique to help you realize that every thought is really two thoughts.
Well, yeah, but I mean the thing of it, where you get yourself to think about something else. That's the win. You got yourself to shift away from the here's what is pattern.
To what you want.
That's a big, big win.
Yes.
In fact, that's something else I'd love to hear from our listeners about. You know, any wins of that nature. I mean, certainly any wins that people want to share, we're happy to share on the air because any good thing that happens is a win. But especially if it's something where you were able to shift your thought, that's the kind of win I'd love to hear about because that's the best kind.
Yes, and that's what it's all about. Get practicing shifting to what you want, to what you want.
Yep.
Because like I said before, we're always saying yes to everything we're focusing on. So you might as well focus on what you want.
Yes.
Why not? That's we want to attract what we want. So
yes.
Focus on what we want.
I'm continuing to say yes.
Say yes to what you want.
It sounds like a PR campaign, doesn't it?
Just
say
that's
yes.
That's why I said it like that.
Actually, I guess I didn't quite write. It didn't just say yes. It's... We always say yes.
We're always saying yes to what we're thinking about or focusing on.
So everything we say is yes.
Yes.
Which makes it easier to understand what happens when your requests get put out to God or the universe or however you want to think about it. The answer is always yes.
And that's why I think the question we got today about why don't I attract what I ask for, I'm sure it has to do with the fact that he must be focusing more about what's not happening for him.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely focused on lack. There's no doubt. The only real question is, in what manner is he focused on lack?
Exactly. We don't know enough details.
And it's probably a manner he is not consciously aware of.
Yeah.
Because that's the most common thing, that we focus on lack. We think we're focused on the thing or on the thought, but we're actually focused on the lack of it. And until you get used to recognizing the difference in your own life in the tough areas, the areas that are tough for you, until you start recognizing it there, it can be very confusing. And it can be debilitating. Because you don't,
for sure.
You know, you just feel like you're constantly defeated.
Because you're stuck in the loop of what I don't want. What is.
Which is not a happy loop.
No.
There's not a whole lot of happiness that goes on in that loop. That's a loop do I have to get up this morning?
But just reach, if someone listening is stuck in that loop, just do your best to reach for even one thought a little better than where you are. And then when you feel like you can, one thought better than that, and just start slowly pulling yourself up out of it. That really works. It really does.
I also have a thing that I do where, in order to help myself get out of that kind of bad thought pattern, thought place, I try to get myself to, I mean, there's sometimes I can't reach for that other thought. You know what I mean? I can't find it. So I develop a little trick. And I have a number of them that I use. And I urge people to come up with little tricks that work for you. My little trick is I taught myself how to smile when I wasn't feeling happy. Because that trick, the idea of that trick resonated with me. So I said, okay, I'll learn that one. If it doesn't resonate with you, don't try.
So you mean literally smile? Literally.
Yeah, like push my, if I have to, I'll take my two fingers and I'll push my face into a smile. The reason I picked that particular trick is this is actually scientifically true. They've been able to demonstrate this by tracing what happens with neurotransmitters in your body. But when you force yourself to smile, a little trickle of, I can't remember which one it is, one of the happy neurotransmitters.
Like endorphins or something?
It was an endorphin. It was something like that. Gets sent through your system. I can't remember which one it is. So you get this little tiny jolt, a little buzz of happiness.
Yes.
Now, if you're feeling depressed, that's probably not enough to move you very much. But I find that just the reminder of it and the little tiny bit you get becomes a reinforcement reminder. It's like, this shifting of the mind really does work. This is how I'm reminding myself of it.
Yes.
Even if I don't feel it yet, I'm reminding myself that it works.
But it's true. When you smile, you feel it.
You feel
that smile.
Yeah, you feel it. Yeah. And just that reminder, over time, I have learned to turn that reminder into a way to reach that other thought that I can't reach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm in that bad place, this is my way of getting myself to at least get partway there. And that's like you constantly say, it isn't about trying to get there all in one big gulp. It's about trying to get there incrementally. Well, that's how you get yourself to take that first step toward where you want to be. So even if you can't find that happy thought, find a happy action.
Yes, as they say, turn that frown upside down.
Turn the frown upside down. That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my favorite things to do if I'm really down and if I can remember to do it is there's a Robin Williams appearance on a TV show called Inside the Actor Studio. You can actually get it on DVD. That is just hysterical. The first 15 minutes of that, he was just playing on. And I love it. I even though I've seen it probably 50 times, I'll use that as a way to cheer myself up because invariably at some point during it, even though I know every single funny thing he does, I'll still laugh at least one of them.
Yes.
And that thing about laughing is critical. Laughter is probably one of the best ways we have to get closer to that happy place when we're not feeling happy.
Yes, and if you could laugh every morning, like I had told you before, I went to that health retreat, and every morning there was exercise, and at the end of the exercise, the instructor said, okay, now everyone just start laughing.
Yes.
And at first you're like, what?
Yeah.
But then someone starts laughing, and someone else, then you're like, oh, it's kind of contagious. So before you know it, you're laughing for a few minutes. And they insist on doing that every morning because it just does something positive to how you feel.
In fact, regardless of whether you use laughter as a way to get to a better thought, I mean, it certainly is good to do that, and I thoroughly recommend it. But even if you don't use it for that, you can still use it for if you're sick. Believe it or not, laughter literally heals.
Yes, and I think that's why they did it at this health retreat, not only to make everyone feel better, because it is like a medicinal thing.
It is. It not only makes you feel better, it makes you feel better.
Yes, literally, physically.
It does, physically. It's truly a remarkable thing that, and they can trace this. I know I've mentioned this before, but I'll say it again. Modern medical researchers are able to trace the moment that a person laughs, and from that point on, they can trace through the body how it leads to a series of responses that end up healing cells in the area of the body that need healing cells.
I love that.
They can actually trace that. So this isn't some sort of Zig Ziglar thing. This is real. This is real. Science now agrees laughter heals.
Yes, absolutely. And it's a high vibration activity. Laughing is a high vibration activity.
Very high vibration.
That's why I always tell people, what are you going to do for fun? Like, what fun thing have you done lately? Because just to remind, like, oh, that's right. It's important to do something fun. Something fun is a high vibration activity. Like, laughing is a high vibration activity.
By the way, it's very important to physically laugh. I want to make sure we hit that point. It's not enough to find something to be funny.
Right.
You have to actively laugh, because until you actively physically laugh, that healing mechanism doesn't kick off in the brain.
Oh, you mean like where your body is just like, your body is shaking
and you're ha 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 ha, and that's the activity that kicks off the healing. It isn't, I find that funny. If you sit there with a droll look on your face and said, no, that's funny, it doesn't work. It doesn't have
the same
effect. No,
right.
you actively have to laugh.
Indeed,
the famous cancer cures, there are a few of those, quite a few of those. Mm-hmm. The first one being Norman Cousins back in the 1950s, who had cancer and cured himself of cancer by watching Marx Brothers and Charlie Chaplin movies.
Wow.
I question his sense of humor, but what the hell? Hey, it worked. The main thing is he got himself to laugh. That's the key point. And he just laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. Similar thing in The Secret, the movie The Secret. And we, of course, talked about the book The Secret earlier this year. In the movie, there's the couple, the Goodmans. He was the guy who crashed the airplane. She's the one who cured herself of cancer. And she tells the story about how the two of them listened and watched funny movies all day long.
Yeah.
And 3 months later, her cancer was gone.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, you have to do it a lot. I mean, one laugh ain't going to do it. But if you can do it every single day, and you can spend, this is the best part. This is going to be tough for many people because they're having to earn a living and be out in the work world. But to whatever degree you can spend the largest chunk of your day possible laughing, no matter what your medical condition is, you can overcome it. You just have to do it often enough.
Well, buy the DVDs of I Love Lucy and just put them in your...
You just watch Lucy at the assembly line eating the chocolates, right?
Yeah, those are so many classic ones that are just so funny.
She was an absolutely wonderful clown. She was just terrific to watch. And I think she's still broadcast around the world today. I believe her
shows
are still playing everywhere.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean,
it's been those years ago, and it's still the most popular.
Oh, yeah.
Sitcom.
It's almost 70 years ago. That's crazy. Not quite, but.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I know.
Just amazing. So, we got. We're actually a little bit over here, so we got to kind of draw this to a close, but just want to. Finish off by saying what the last paragraph says. It says, we want you to understand that you do not have to worry about this stuff. You have absolute control over the set points that you achieve. And we want you to understand the extreme value in deliberately achieving your own set points, because once you expect something, it will come. The details of it may play out differently, but the vibrational essence will always be an exact match. It's a great way to end it, don't you think?
Yes, and I love the word expect something, because I think that's part of the problem people have is they don't expect it.
Absolutely. David, it's been a pleasure as usual.
Yes, well, it's wonderful. And if anybody wants to find out more about me, they can go to lifecoachdavid.com, and you can find out how to contact me as well there.
And, of course, we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.